Okay, so if you have no willpower when it comes to certain foods, struggle with overeating and binging, and you just can't stop, and you've tried countless things, and you're just about ready to give up, but you thought you'd give this podcast a chance, we're going to help you today. This is your podcast for health and inspiration. I'm your host, Bill Klaproth, and this is Which Way Is Life, episode number 63. My guest today, Dr. Glenn Livingston. Glenn is a veteran psychologist and previous consultant to major food manufacturers. His research has appeared in the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, and he has appeared on ABC, WGN, and CBS Radio. So, disillusioned by what traditional psychology had to offer overweight and/or food-obsessed individuals, Dr. Livingston spent several decades researching the nature of binging and overeating via work with his own patients and a self-funded research program with more than 40,000 participants. And we're going to dig into his new book, Never Binge Again. So, if you're seeking help, hopefully you're going to get it here. I think you are. And we're going to help you out here. Dr. Livingston, thank you for joining me today. I like to start the show with the one thing. Are you ready?
Of course I'm ready.
All right, I love it. I love it. Can you quickly share with us one thing someone can do to improve their life today?
I'd like to think about your single worst trigger food or eating behavior and make a crystal clear rule which defines when you're being healthy versus when you're not. You'll understand why that's important later. An example of that might be, I will never eat while I'm standing up again. Maybe there's somebody who's, you know, who's kind of grazing while they're walking around the kitchen and preparing things, and it's really ruining their health and fitness goals, and say, I will never eat while I'm standing up again. And we'll talk about why it's entirely possible to do that and what all the benefits are as we go through.
Okay, sounds good. All right, Glenn. Well, again, thank you for being on with me. And before we dig into your story, can you let us in on your personal life a little bit? What brings you joy when you're not saving the world?
Well, I definitely get joy from saving the world, but I love to hike. I live right near Forest Park in Portland, Oregon, and I love to walk by the waterfalls and smell all the fresh air and talk to the people along the way and look at the animals, and that's what I love to do.
No, that's very cool. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. And I quickly want to mention Which Way Is Life is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/whichwayislife. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Dr. Livingston, let's get right into this. Why do we binge? Why do we overeat?
Well, there are a lot of reasons that coordinate into the perfect storm in our society today. And some of it was not information I gleaned from my research, but information I gleaned from the corporate consulting that I did for many years. I was the CEO of a marketing research firm, and we consulted for Fortune 100 companies, and a lot of those were in the food industry. And I discovered that there's an awful lot of money that's going into packaging up and engineering these hyper-palatable food-like substances. It's not food. It's not really what existed on the savannah or in the tropics. It's a food-like substance, which is crammed full of starch and sugar and oil and fat and salt and excitotoxins and pretty much a lot of other stuff that pushes our evolutionary pleasure buttons and tells our brain that it's food, but it's not really food. And then there are billions of dollars more that go into packaging it up so that it looks healthy, and then advertising it in such a way that we believe that we really need it. And I think the last I looked, there was more than 5,000 messages that were beamed at us about food over the course of every year, and virtually none of them are for fruit and vegetables, so you can draw your own conclusions. And then on top of that, you take the fact that the addiction treatment industry tells us that we're powerless, that we're not able to quit, that we should strive for progress and not perfection, and that the best we can do is abstain from these things one day at a time. And you put it all together, and they're saying you can't quit if you wanted to, and you've got the billions of dollars going into pushing these buttons and making us think it's healthy and inundating our brains with images and messages about it. And it's kind of a wonder that anybody doesn't binge. It's kind of a wonder that anybody is able to eat healthy at all because of this perfect storm of forces it's not really, in my estimation, all of the emotional reasons that get us to binge and make us stop it, make us continue binging. It's really this perfect storm of forces and the inability to hear the voice inside of us that rationalizes the binge. So that's the shortest, most concise way that I can say it. It's really a big problem in society today. And thankfully, I eventually, after 30 years of suffering, did find a solution. But that's my short answer.
So our processed, packaged foods that is very well marketed, and then being told, hey, you can't quit, that has all kind of added up and piled on to get us to the point where we're at then.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't have these bags and boxes and containers in the savannah, right? It's not something that we evolved to be able to resist. And there are a whole bunch of animal studies done in the 50s and early 60s that suggested that, well, for example, they implanted electrodes in a rat's pleasure center in the brain, and they wired it to a lever that the rats could push on their own to self-stimulate. And what they found was that when rats are given the ability to artificially stimulate their pleasure centers, which is exactly what's being done to us with the bags and boxes and containers of all this hyperpalatable food, when the rats would press those levers thousands of times per hour at the expense of their self-care. Even if they were starving, they would ignore the food and press the button. Even if they were mothers nursing pups, they would ignore their pups and press the button. Even if they had to pass a painful electrical grid and cross over it and endure all that pain, they would do that so they could push this artificial stimulation to pleasure button. And so, we're really being overcome by a bad situation that's forcing us all to engage in self-neglect. And, like I said, I can talk a little bit more about the very weird solution that I found, but...
We're addicted. We're addicted to it then. I mean, I've got to have that brownie. I've got to have it.
We believe it's a matter of survival. It feels in our bones like a matter of survival. You hear people make jokes, just hand over the chocolate and everything will be okay. Nobody gets hurt, right?
Right.
We really do believe that it's a matter of our survival.
Wow. All right. So you were just mentioning your crazy, weird trick. I definitely want to hear it. What is it?
Well, what you have to understand is that these substances are aimed at our lizard brains. For all intents and purposes, the neuroanatomy of a human being can be divided into three parts based upon when it evolved in nature. The lizard brain looks at something in the environment and says, do I eat it, do I mate with it, or do I kill it? Eat, mate, or kill. There's no consideration of what impact it has on our tribe or our loved ones or our family. There's no consideration of our longer-term goals or aspirations or, you know, soulfulness or spirituality or music or art or, you know, contribution to society. It's just eat, mate, or kill. It's the mammalian brain, which evolved millions of years later, that began to say, wait, before you eat, mate, or kill that thing, what impact is that going to have on the tribe or the herd? And then it's the logical brain or the neocortex that evolved superior to all that millions of years later, to be able to delay that impulse in terms of being able to direct it towards more strategic goals, like your overall health and fitness goals, like creativity, music, religion, whatever it is that's important to you. The things that you think of as distinctly you, the things that you think of as making you human. And what I discovered after years of psychological research, which didn't really lead me anywhere, was an alternative way of looking at things, which said, look, everybody in our culture is saying you should love yourself thin. It's not what you're eating, it's what's eating you. And there is a soulful connection between the particular binge foods people choose and the psychological struggles they have. What was relevant to me was that people that eat chocolate people that binge on chocolate tend to be struggling with loneliness or heartbreak in some way. People that gravitate towards chips and crunchy, salty foods tend to be stressed at work, things like that. But knowing that doesn't really solve the problem because, for example, when
it's still
when
a problem,
I figured
right?
out, yeah,
either way, it's a problem, right?
It's a problem either way, and there's this little crazy voice inside of you that says, look, Lynn, you're right. Your mama and your papa, they didn't love you enough, and you really are lonely inside because of that. And until you find the love of your life, you really are going to have to just keep right on binging. And so I came across an alternative addiction treatment literature by Jack Trimpe. He wrote a book called Rational Recovery. And he deals with the black and white addiction, so it didn't really work for food the way it was. Basically, he said, look, you can't love yourself out of an addiction. It's more like capturing and caging a rabid animal. Because what you're doing is when you're standing in line at Starbucks and there's a big hairy chocolate bar at the counter and there's this little voice in your head that says, well, you know, Glenn, chocolate comes from a cocoa bean and cocoa bean comes from a plant and therefore chocolate's a vegetable, so it's okay. Well, that's your lizard brain whispering to you. And if your paradigm at that point is, I need to love myself more, then what you're going to do is relinquish your logical brain, relinquish the mammalian brain, and let the lizard brain run rampant because you got to love it. What you want to do instead is cultivate a sense of distaste for it so that you wake up at the moment of impulse and say, whoa, I'm not going to let that thing control me. And the way that I did that was I decided that I was going to make a rule. I'm never going to have chocolate during the week again. And therefore, if I heard something in my head saying that chocolate was a vegetable or there's any other reason that I could have it during the week, I decided that was my pig, and the pig was squealing. The things it was saying, that was pig squeal. And the things that it wanted, in other words, chocolate, that was pig slop. And I don't eat pig slop. I don't let farm animals tell me what to do. And I'm always really embarrassed at this point in these interviews because I'm a sophisticated psychologist. I spent years doing tens of millions of dollars of professional research. And after all that, the only thing that worked for me was, you know, I don't eat pig slop and I don't let farm animals tell me what to do. But that's basically what worked. And from there, it was just a matter of concentrating on helping people to find the right set of food rules for them and, you know, adding things that they always do and, you know, adding rules that supported mindfulness and things like that. But that's how I solved it. That's how I solved it. I don't need pig slop. I don't let farm animals tell me what to do.
So the pig squeal then is the voice you hear in your head. Is that right? Because we all have that. Oh boy, that looks good. Because you're right. How many times does that happen when you're at Starbucks? All the time. Oh God, that looks really good.
Yep.
Yeah, I think I can go for. So the pig squeal, the voice in your head, and the pig slop is the actual food. And then say to yourself, I don't take direction from farm animals. I'm not going to eat pig slop.
What it does is it gives you those few extra microseconds. It gives you a sense of distaste or disgust at the moment of impulse, and it gives you a few extra microseconds to remember who you are and what's important to you. That's what it does.
So,
and then you can make the right decision.
So it just gives you those few extra seconds to where you think. Now, sometimes I would imagine you're still going to lose out, but after time, do you start to win more? Or you start to come to your senses more often?
Yeah. I mean, so there are a couple of things to say about that. First of all, it's really important to have a crystal clear goal. So you notice I said, I never eat chocolate on a weekday. That's a crystal clear goal as opposed to I avoid chocolate 90% of the time. The reason it's important to have a rule as opposed to a guideline is because ambiguity turns out to be the pig's best friend. If you say I avoid chocolate 90% of the time, the pig can say something like, well, you know, it's only January and you've had chocolate 3 days in a row, but there's still 300 days left in the year. So certainly you can have it again today, right? But if you say I never eat chocolate on a weekday again, well, 10 people could follow me around all week long. There's no way the pig could convince me that a Wednesday was a weekend. So you need to have a really crystal clear definition of what healthy eating is for you and what it's not. The thing that people are frightened of when they're making a commitment to never doing something or always doing something, there's a couple of things. They're scared that they couldn't change their mind if they wanted to. And what I tell them about that is that it's kind of like talking to a two-year-old. You know, if you've got a two-year-old little boy, you're going to tell him, hey, Johnny, you can't ever cross the street without holding daddy's hand. Never, ever, 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 ever. Never again. You can't ever cross the street without holding daddy's hand. you know darn well that when that kid is 7 or 8 years old, you're going to teach them how to look both ways and cross the street. So mm-hmm. you talk to a little child differently than the way that you talk to an adult or an older child. And you talk to your pig much differently than you would talk to your adult self with, you know, more rational, reasonable goals. And so from the pig's perspective, it's got to be never. You've got to take total control, like an alpha wolf growls down and snarls down the challenging wolf in the pack, because that's the level at which this conflict takes place. It's not a rational, adult, mature conversation. So it really does need to be that strict. And the other reason that people are frightened of these types of very clear rules, because they think they're going to feel too guilty if they make a mistake. And I tell them to think about the analogy of an Olympic archer. And if an Olympic archer is aiming for the bullseye, they're doing so with the totality of their being. Every ounce of their soul is visualizing that arrow going into the bullseye. They account for the wind and how far they pull back the arrow and the amount of tension that's on the blade and all that kind of thing. But they purge the doubt and insecurity from their mind. And that's the nature of a commitment. It's 100% commitment towards the goal. If they happen to miss the bullseye, they don't take the rest of the arrows and shoot them up in the air. They just stand up, they recommit, and they do it again. And if you keep getting up and aiming at the bullseye, your aim gets better and better and better. And the guilt that people feel afterwards, it actually turns out to be the pig's best effort to make you feel weak so that you will binge again. Because that's all the pig mm-hmm. really wants, is for you to binge. But if you touch a hot stove, you're not supposed to just perseverate and feel guilty about it. You're supposed to feel some pain. It's supposed to get your attention. You're supposed to figure out where was the hot stove and how am I going to avoid touching it again. You're supposed to have a period of physical recovery because you will have been burned. But you're not supposed to go put your whole hand down on it and say, I'm just a compulsive hot stove toucher. I'm diseased. There's something wrong with me. I'm going to always touch hot stoves. You're supposed to let go once you have paid attention and done the analysis necessary to be better next time. And mm-hmm. so if you don't have to be frightened of making a mistake and you know that you can change your plan later on, and you know that focus and clarity is what's necessary to be a winner, then why wouldn't you do it? So it can take some time. People do fall down. You have to get up a few times to perfect it, but you still want to make 100% commitment.
And as far as cravings go, you have a craving defeater. Can you share that with us?
Well, the way to defeat the cravings is to disown them. When you say, I don't want that, my pig does. Now, you do that by having made the decisions beforehand. So for example, willpower is a fatigable muscle. There are only so many good decisions we can make over the course of the day. That's scientifically proven. But character is not fatigable. So how much effort did it take? How much willpower did it take not to steal the waitress's tip that was sitting on the table at the diner the last time you were there and nobody was looking? Right? It doesn't mm-hmm. really take any willpower, because you've made a decision as a matter of character beforehand that you're not the kind of person who steals the waitress's tip. You're not a thief. Same with robbing a bank. Same with any of, you know, society's laws. You've made a decision that you're not that kind of person. Even if you could get away with it, you wouldn't. You can do the same thing with just about any impulse. You can decide that you're not the kind of person who eats chocolate during the week. And so no matter how strong of a physiological urge you might experience, you could assign that to your pig and say, you know, that's pig slop, and I don't eat pig slop, and I don't let farm animals tell me what to do. And by the way, the less you reinforce the craving by actually feeding it, the weaker the craving becomes. And if you're willing to, if people struggle with doing it conditionally, like during the week, if you're willing to be someone like me who says, well, I'll never eat chocolate again, some people can eat chocolate all the time, but I can't, then the cravings go away entirely after a while. It's kind of like a prisoner in a jail cell, but eventually they lose hope if they've got a life sentence, because the hope is actually painful. And what happens is, because these substances really weren't available in the tropics around the savannah as we were evolving, if you replace them with what the natural craving might be for, and in the case of chocolate, it might be for some fruit or some leafy greens or something that provides a natural sense of energy from, you know, whole foods in nature, your survival drive will readjust. You have to be able to tell yourself that feelings are not facts, and that just because every bone in your body says you're not going to survive without that chocolate, that doesn't mean that it's true. And if you eat the whole food anyway and you turn back to what nature really intended, you have to intellectually understand that your survival drive is going to adjust and the cravings are going to go away. But it takes some time, and you have to have an intellectual belief and kind of take a leap of faith. You can't really wait for it to feel right.
All right. Well, Glenn, thank you for being here, and go grab the book, Never Binge Again. I really think it's going to help you. And we're just basically touching the surface of what's in this book. Coming up, we get the high five from Dr. Glenn Livingston. But if I could ask a quick favor, I have one simple goal for this podcast. I want people to walk away with something they've heard to improve their life. And I want more people to hear the great messages of my guests. So if you can, please go over to iTunes. If you have an iTunes account, in the search bar, put Which Way Is Life. I will pop up. You'll see my page right there. Hit the ratings and reviews tab. Give me a rating and a review. And by doing that, we gain more people. We reach a wider audience. And we have the chance to help more people. And that's what this podcast is all about. The High Five with Dr. Glenn Livingston is next. Which Way Is Life is brought to you by Audible.com. And just for listening to Which Way Is Life, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check it out. So if you like listening to podcasts like this one, you're going to love Audible.com. So I would recommend you check it out and browse all the books you can download for free with a 30-day trial. Just go to audibletrial.com/ and then type in Which Way Is Life. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ Which Way Is Life for your free audio book. Time for the high five with my guest today, Dr. Glenn Livingston. Glenn, are you ready?
I sure am.
All right, question number one. What made you want to write this book?
I was a exercise bulimic. Food ruined my life. I couldn't stop thinking about pizza and pasta and chocolate and Pop-Tarts and sugar pops and anything else you could imagine that came in a bag or a box or a container. And it was interfering with my work, it was interfering with my love life, and it was interfering with my physique. I did it to save my life, my own life.
Hmm. Question number two, if you could share a mindful meal with anyone, since we're speaking of food, living or deceased, who would it be and why?
Jeanine Roth, because she really does understand the emotional side of overeating better than anybody I know.
Okay. And question number three, looking back, what advice would you give your younger self?
The only thing you need to do to never binge again is never binge again. You don't have to sit by the river and contemplate your navel. You don't have to smack yourself over the head with a spatula. You don't have to spend years in groups and doing moral inventories and things like that. You just need to define a really clear plan for how you want to eat, learn how to separate your mind into these two constructive versus destructive parts, and start to ignore the destructive part.
Okay. Question number four. Do you have a favorite quote you can share with us?
Jim Rohn said, a life of discipline is better than a life of regret, and that has been more true in my life than anything else. A life of discipline is better than a life of regret. I think freedom sits on top of discipline. Like a jazz pianist needs to know the scales backwards and forwards before he can improvise around them, so too do we all need to build health and fitness and mental discipline in order to experience true freedom and enjoyment of life.
Mm-hmm. That's a great quote, and a good quote to use in a moment of weakness, too.
Yeah.
And question number five, finish this sentence. Throughout my life, the most important thing I've learned is?
Invest in your health, education, and compassion for others.
Excellent. All right, Glenn, well, thank you so much for your time again today, and how can we connect with you?
If you go over to neverbingeagain.com, we've been talking very much in theory about how this works, but if you sign up for that list, you will get a free copy of the book on Kindle, Nook, or PDF. Mm-hmm. You will also get a set of free food plan starter templates, no matter what dietary philosophy you follow. And there are several recorded coaching sessions that we'll send to you so that you can hear how this works in practice.
That's excellent.
Neverbingeagain.com, click the big red button.
It's very good. And we're going to put a link to that on the show notes page at radiomd.com. Glenn, I could talk to you for another hour about this. I know we just touched the surface, but go over, visit Glenn on his website, go to Amazon, and read all the reviews. Amazing. Make sure you check that out. Never binge again. And as we wrap up here, Glenn, I'm going to leave you with one of my favorite quotes, which is, remember to enjoy the little things in life, because one day you will look back and realize they were the big things. Glenn, thank you again for your time today.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Bill.
So fun talking with Glenn. I hope you got something out of that interview, and thank you for listening. Remember to catch every episode of Which Way Is Life. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or my show page at radiomd.com. And if I can ask a favor, please take 30 seconds and rate the podcast on iTunes. The reason being is we want to attract more people just like you to the show, and we can do that if you rate and review it, and then we can help more people. Which Way Is Life is produced by radiomd.com, award-winning health podcast. I'd also like to thank my producer, Pamela Moore. I'm Bill Klaproth. You can find me at Which Way Is Life on Twitter and Facebook. You can also check out the show notes at radiomd.com for all of my episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.